It's raining and cold. As you are walking towards the hotel, the rain starts to come down heavier, so you run to the door. You're greeted by the hotel owner, who guides you to your room. He leaves, and you open the door. You walk in and put your luggage down onto the floor. You go back towards the door and turn on the light. When you turn around, you see a woman hanging from the rafters in the ceiling. After screaming in horror, she disappears. Welcome to Ghost Tales by the Fireside. I'm your host, Clem Dalloway. And this episode is about the historic building, which is now the Prince Rupert Hotel in Shrewsbury, Shropshire. With 900 years of history, it's bound to have a few ghost stories. In the Doomsday Book of 1086, Shrewsbury was the land of Roger de Montgomery, who was the Earl of Shrewsbury. It was worth £40 and had 86 households, making it one of the largest settlements recorded in the book. The town has had many connections with royalty over the years, including a visit from Henry II in 1158. Who granted several privileges to the monks of Shrewsbury. In 1396, Richard II moved his parliament from Westminster to Shrewsbury and held his court there. And it's said he held it with barbaric splendour. In 1485, prior to the Battle of Bosworth, King Henry VII shouted in a house on Wild Cup near to the Lion Hotel. From the time of William I to the reign of James II, Shrewsbury received 32 royal charters. But the one royal who seems to have a lasting legacy in the town is Prince Rupert of the Rhine, the grandson of James I and the nephew of Charles I. On the 20th of September 1642, 2 months before the Battle of Edge Hill, the first battle of the English Civil War, King Charles I, along with his sons, Charles and James, were granted free access to the town, and he was to be entertained in the best manner. Charles's son, James, and his cousin, Prince Rupert, spent some time at the Jones Mansion. Which Jones Mansion is questionable. In the year of 1642, there were 3 Jones Mansions in Shrewsbury, all owned by different members of the same family. So which mansion did Prince Rupert stay in? So let's take a look at a short history of the Jones family. William Jones, originally from Wales, settled in Shrewsbury and became a very wealthy draper. The town was famous for its drapers. He commissioned a house to be built in 1570 on the corner of Grove Lane and the High Street. Today, the location of Costa Coffee. William and his wife Eleanor had 4 sons and a daughter, Richard, Thomas, Edward, Isaac, and Sarah. He died in 1612, and the house, Jones Mansion, was left to his eldest son Richard, also a draper, who moved into the property and stayed there until his death in 1638. His second son, Thomas, became a wealthy merchant who became bailiff from 1601 and High Sheriff of Shropshire in 1624 and Chief Magistrate in 1638. Also in 1638, Charles I appointed Thomas as the first Mayor of Shrewsbury, granting a royal charter to the town and the right to elect a mayor. Thomas and his wife Sarah moved into a timber-framed house at the bottom of Wild Cop, also known as Jones Mansion. The building was demolished in 1829. William's third son, Edward, became a lawyer. His house is part of the present-day Prince Rupert Hotel on Butcher Row, which was also known as Joan's Mansion. When his brother Thomas died in 1642, Edward moved into the Joan's Mansion on Wild Cop. So it makes sense that Prince Rupert stayed at the Joan's Mansion, which is now part of the present-day Prince Rupert Hotel, which incorporates part of the original house, along with other buildings from different ages, ranging from the 12th century. Prince Rupert is also said to have stayed at the Dun Cow on Foregate Street, the oldest pub in the town. The mansion on Butcher's Row was said to have had a large forecourt, which was built over in the 18th century. At the end of the 19th century, the property was divided into five separate properties due to the owner struggling with finances. In 1996, Mike Matthews became the owner of the Prince Rupert Hotel. Over the next few years, he purchased the adjoining buildings and incorporated them into the hotel. Part of it being from the 12th century, the Tudor era, and some parts from later years. It's now a Grade 2 listed building and is considered in the top 5% of important historic buildings in the United Kingdom. When Mike Matthews took over the hotel in 1996, the rooms were full, so he and his nephew had to stay on camping beds in what would become the Prince Rupert Lounge. They went to the bar to get a drink and were gone for around 40 seconds. When they got back, their pillows were gone. They looked for them all over the hotel until they finally found them in the lift, which is over the other side of the building. Everyone was in their rooms, and they would have noticed if someone was around to take them. Before this, Mike was very sceptical about the supernatural. But this was only the start of what was to come. He would be working in the office, and objects that he'd been using would disappear only moments after he'd put them down. They would turn up in places that didn't make sense, even in guest rooms. In the Prince Rupert suite, many guests have witnessed an indentation in the bed, as if someone was sitting on it. This is something that happens more than once a month. The Prince Rupert suite has had more sightings than any other part of the hotel. A reporter who wanted to have a paranormal experience booked the room for a night, just to see if he would see anything. He took many photos, and when they were developed, one of them had an image reflecting in the mirror that is on the wardrobe, as if it was a reflection of someone else who was in the room, but he was alone. The ghost of a maid has also been seen in and around the Prince Rupert suite. She's usually going about her daily duties of cleaning and tidying, but when she is seen, she looks embarrassed and quickly vanishes. It's believed that at some point in history, when the house was a private residence, a maid took her own life in one of the rooms after her fiancé left her for someone else. This was room 6, and many guests have reported entering the room to find a woman hanging from the ceiling. They've described her as wearing old-fashioned clothes, and she looks like a normal person, not transparent like in the movies. Late on a Tuesday night, a man who had been working in the area needed a room to stay in, as it was too late for him to travel 100 miles to go back home. He visited the hotel and was lucky that a room was free. Unfortunately for him, he was given room 6. It was around 9:30 in the evening when he needed something to eat. Food usually isn't served that late, but the chef made him a sandwich. He ate his food and had a drink, and then retired to his room for the night, as he had to be up early in the morning for work in another town. As he entered the room, he turned the light on to find a woman hanging from the ceiling. He screamed down the corridor for help, and people came running. When he went back to the room, along with the other guests, the woman had mysteriously gone. He questioned the manager when he turned up to see what was going on. The manager then told him about the story of the maid who took her own life. The man left straight away and took the rest of the week off work in shock. The manager was kind enough to refund him. A young man is often seen through the window of room 7, and it's a very similar story to room 6. It's not known who he was, but he's believed to have shot himself after the girl he loved left him for his best friend. Guests and staff have said that he looks out of the windows and wanders the corridors, and when he's seen, he looks very pale and sad, leaving any witnesses with the feeling of sadness too. In the early 2000s, a new member of the housekeeping team had to clean room 7 after a guest had left. As she walked along the corridor that leads to the room, she started to feel a bit down. It was unlike her to be like this, as she was such a bubbly character. As she approached room 7, she noticed that the door wasn't shut properly. As she put her hand down to push the door open, a man walked straight through the door. She quickly moved out of the way, and he walked off down the corridor, and then disappeared before reaching the end. She was terrified and ran into the kitchen, telling the kitchen staff what she'd seen. The staff told her about the man who'd killed himself, and she confirmed that he didn't seem normal. She said that he was tall and slim, with a very pale face, and a gaunt, sad look. She left the job after this experience. When one of the rooms was being renovated, the floorboards were removed to reveal a spiral staircase that led down into the ground. After being examined by experts, it was revealed that it dated back to the 12th century, and it led down into the medieval cellars. The staircase and walls of the cellars are integrated into the original medieval walls, and there are doorways that have been blocked up that may be entrances to tunnels that lead to other parts of the town. The skeleton of a young girl was supposed to have been found amongst the rubble in the cellars, but I can't find any evidence of this. A local historian who takes people on ghost tours claims to have been held around the throat by unseen hands on many occasions while being in the cellar. The invisible entity has left red marks on his throat and on others too. People doing the ghost tour in the cellar have said that they've felt someone touching the back of their neck, and it has been known for their necklaces to be unclamped by the ghost. One woman on the tour once said that she could feel a little boy grab her hand and pull her towards the stairs. She said that she couldn't see him, but she knew he was there. He guided her outside to the opposite side of the cellar wall. The guide followed her, and when she stopped, he told her that, in Tudor times, a little boy was drowned in a pond that used to be in the location of where they were standing. Thank you for listening to Ghost Tales by the Fireside. You can find more information about the episodes on the website, ghosttales.co.uk. There's a Facebook page, Ghost Tales Podcast, and Instagram, Ghost Tales Podcast. This podcast will be out monthly and is available on most podcast platforms. All music, research, writing, production, art, and sound effects are all my own work.